In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
And welcome. So glad you're joining us today here on the I Spy Radio Show. We hope you had a great 4th of July when we celebrate our revolution, when America threw off tyranny. We have a situation, though, where the President of the United States right now is being accused of fraud and corruption, taking millions of dollars for influence peddling while he was Vice President and in the years since. Of course he did it. We all know he did it. And we know there was a cover-up by people in our own government to hide his crimes. How do we know? Because you trust the evidence of actions, not the words. Let's look at just one action. You don't set up multiple bank accounts in multiple countries using multiple shell companies through which to traffic the money. But that's how the Bidens got their money from foreign actors. Honest people doing honest things don't need to do that. Also, thanks to the Patriot Act, there are laws on the books that track transactions over $10,000 in and out of bank accounts. Are we to honestly believe the IRS and DOJ and the other agencies that allegedly watchdog these transactions somehow didn't notice $40 million in payments from foreign nationals to the Bidens? You know, the former Vice President of the United States. This didn't get anyone's attention? But of course, laws are only truly laws if they're enforced. And here's the thing. Is it really so hard to believe that someone who was willing to commit that kind of blatant fraud would be willing to steal an election? Keep in mind, modern-day elections are about controlling trillions of dollars. Are we to believe that someone corrupt enough to take $40 million from the Ukrainians, the Russians, the Chinese, and anyone else needing influence and willing to pay for it wouldn't take the opportunity to steal an election and trillions from the taxpayer? What did the Democrats do when they got control of the presidency and Congress? What was their highest priority? They voted themselves money. Trillions of it, over $600 billion in one vote alone, the stupidly named Inflation Reduction Act. $600 billion of that went to green energy, which goes right to Democrat-controlled hands, Democrat support groups, and Democrat election groups. But it's not just about voting money for your side. That's too obvious. The kind of influence peddling and corrupt money that Joe Biden was getting isn't that simple. It's not just getting favorable laws passed or cash for your briber from the government through government contracts. Sometimes it's making sure things don't happen, like with China, stopping laws to hold them accountable for things like stealing our intellectual property or unfair trade practices. Stopping those kinds of things are invisible, because it's hard to notice what doesn't happen. But that sort of thing is easily worth a few millions to Joe when it means billions more to the people paying him. And the only way to change that sort of thing is through an election, a process we're not allowed to question or challenge, because to do so is to stop the corruption and maybe even hold them accountable. But the only people who have that power to change elections for the good, where they can be trusted again, are the corrupt people who got elected. Fortunately, there are laws on the books that can enforce fair elections. But as I said, laws are only laws and only effective if they're enforced. There are still judges and those in the judiciary who have opportunities to stop the corruption. But how many of them have become corrupt? We still have a window of opportunity, a small opening to fix things, but it's closing and it's closing fast. And unless we can pry it open in time, it will close for good. And we will be right back to tyranny, and then we'll have to be right back to revolution. On today's show, we're talking about the One Path Around Revolution, election integrity, and some other things too. I'd like to welcome Mark Thielman back to the show, who is involved with such issues as election integrity, reforming Oregon, education, and the School Choice Ballot Initiative. Mark, it's great to talk to you.
Well, it's good to be back, and thanks for having me.
Yeah, so just to remind our audience a little bit about some of the issues that you're engaged with. As I said, you're out there reforming Oregon and involved in the school choice and also election integrity. Is there anything that I've missed?
Well, I mean, most recently we had an oral argument hearing in federal court down in Portland, And for those of us who made it through the homelessness and the crime and the drugs, we were able to get into the building. And if you haven't been there, I love what they've done to the place. It looks like a third world institution, you all boarded up. But yeah, it was really a great process because it was an opportunity for us to really test our argument kind of before a federal judge, and then to sit at the table with the defense, which is the Secretary of State's attorney. And his team, and you know, kind of go toe to toe in terms of the merits of the case. The case was about standing, and as I think I've mentioned prior, you know, we have a very biased court,
right.
And the Secretary of State was arguing that we don't have standing because no matter how corrupt and the current mail-in balloting system, no matter how easy it is to cheat, the plaintiff's votes were impacted the same as everyone else. And therefore, it's a generalized concern, and you don't have standing unless you can show direct harm.
Yeah,
so,
we'll definitely come back. Yeah, we'll definitely come back around to the lawsuit. I think, in fact, that's probably going to take up most of our discussion today. Although I have to say, you know, calling Portland a third world country is probably an insult to a lot of third world countries. But besides that, in the past, you've talked about running for Secretary of State. Are you still considering that? And if so, where are you in that process?
Well, I am still considering it. I have another contingent of people trying to get me to run or talk me into running for Congress as well at CD4. So it's nice to be wanted, you know, having a whole series of meetings that way. But we'll see, you know. The Secretary of State, I think, is where the action is personally.
Yeah. Well, you would certainly make a great Secretary of State, and that would open the door to a lot of different changes that are very needed here in Oregon. You know, we were originally going to talk to you 2 weeks ago before your election integrity lawsuit and the hearing on that, but we had to bump you due to the sudden capitulation of the Oregon Republican senators who had the victory all locked up as long as they just continued the walkout, but suddenly walked back in, and we wanted to get Senator Dennis Lithcomb on to discuss what exactly had happened. But since you got bumped, would you care to comment on what happened and the official Republican response that by surrendering somehow it was actually a big win?
Well, yeah, I haven't been able to determine. I've talked quite directly to a whole host of party people, and no one can really tell me what the victory was. I think they said the victory was is that the worst parts of this heinously bad legislation were either watered down or removed. And I think victory, as I understood it, listening to Senator Canope at the you know, chairman's gathering in Washington County about a month ago, he said that because the Democrats had shut down the entire Republican agenda, that he was going to shut down the entire Democrat agenda. But that would have involved staying out and not coming back and allowing them to pass the entire agenda, which is what, unfortunately, Senator Canope and Senator Anderson and Senator Finley allowed.
Yeah, and I don't get that because a watered-down bill, it didn't need to go through watered down. It needed to die, and they had that opportunity as long as they just stayed out of the building, and unfortunately they bailed on that. So, okay, let's go and take a break. That election integrity lawsuit, we'll dig into that next with Mark Thielman. Welcome back. We're talking with Mark Thielman, the former Republican candidate for governor and now working to keep Oregon from capsizing into a northern version of California. He is an active activist working on issues like election integrity and getting real school choice on the ballot. And, you know, Mark, one of the big reasons we want to have you on is to talk about that election integrity case, because as you alluded to there in the first segment, you do have that lawsuit in the works, which was dismissed on standing. We'll come back around to that. But just to set the stage for all of that discussion, let's talk about some of the broader election integrity issues. Oregon and other states like it claim to have fair and secure elections, that there is no election fraud, or if there is, it's so small it cannot and does not impact outcomes. So is it?
Well, it's all a bunch of hooey. It's called theater. So, you know, and our research and all the evidence that we compiled for the case really highlighted that it was a lot of fun watching a federal judge who had never heard of the evidence before visibly flush and concerned.
Hmm.
And we've seen that everywhere we've gone. I'm going to be speaking tonight again or this evening at another group, and I guarantee you I'll see the same blank look in their faces because people aren't aware. But, you know, we just rolled out the evidence. So the real issue is that they say it's secure. They say they use updated lists. But all of the evidence says otherwise. They don't maintain the voter rolls. They don't update them. You know, we launched evidence right there in court saying, well, here's a gentleman who lives in Baltimore. He lived in Multnomah County for 2 weeks. He still gets his ballot from Multnomah County, and he's been out of the state for 15 years.
Wow.
I'm not sure if that's a good, secure system. I'm thinking it's not. And so the real argument is you know, you hear the Secretary of State's office always says, well, we're trying to make it easy to vote. Yeah, well, it's okay to make things easy to vote, but you shouldn't make things easy to cheat.
That's
exactly the system we've got right now. No clear, rational thinking person could look at the mountain of evidence that we presented in the case and not have concern or have a real legitimate question.
Hmm.
It just cannot happen.
No. So election integrity is a huge issue for the simple reason that if you cannot trust the election, you cannot trust the people who were elected. But it's also a bit of an irony because the people who get elected are the ones responsible for verifying the election integrity.
Mm-hmm.
This is a bit like asking Hunter Biden to audit the fraud payments he gets from other countries.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the solution? Do we need an independent commission to audit elections?
Well, even an independent commission can be an issue. The
Absolutely.
Best way to audit elections is to do two things. One is to set a third-party, neutral-party standard. So you apply a third-party, neutral-party type standard where someone disinterested, maybe from, Ohio, comes in and audits the election. And then in that audit, they apply the National Voters Act, you know, the federal government standard for a third-party audit, none of which occurs here in Oregon. In Oregon, they take maybe 500, 1,500 ballots that these biased people get to pick from the pool, and then they run them through the machine and say, see, it's accurate. That's not an audit.
Mm.
An audit is where you have an appreciably majority of ballots run through, and you look for errors. And again, a disinterested third party, someone who doesn't have skin in the game, isn't from Oregon. That's the federal standard for auditing elections. It's called third-party audits. But in the government, what they do is they appoint who the third party is, which is usually a friend or a crony
mm-hmm.
or somebody's business who voted for them. And then they hire them and they say, hey, run a 1,500 ballot audit or some other standard, and then make sure you declare that everything's on the up and up. It's just a farce. It just cannot be done. Same thing with the voter rolls. They say that they're accurate and they're updated, and nothing can be farther from the truth.
Well, you're describing having third parties and disinterested ones, which what you're really describing is similar to what's going on now with Fagan.
Mm-hmm.
She had to step down, and so the governor asked somebody, a third party from California, to come in and re-audit the situation. So if we can do that with the Secretary of State herself, why not do that with elections?
Well, I mean, you're making a whole lot of sense, but you know, look what state you're talking about, the marijuana audit,
right.
The marijuana and cannabis industry. So they go down to another cannabis legal state, and California, and they bring their cronies and friends from down there up to do a third party audit. None of that passes the muster. A third party audit would be somebody clinical, somebody completely disinterested, probably from a non-cannabis state, to come in and audit that. And this is what I'm saying. Those are the kinds of standards that we need to have.
Mm-hmm.
They're just not practiced. It's not part of the culture of this corrupt government in Oregon.
No. So how does the, assuming they wanted to, how does the Secretary of State audit elections now? I mean, after all, they do want us to trust elections. So I'm sure they audit them every year and have an established process for this, right?
No, they don't have a consistent or established process. And that's we made sure we made that very clear in court, that none of these audits have been done.
Mm.
I mean, it's silly. Some county election clerks do kind of a pseudo audit where they'll bring in three of their friends as citizens to observe the machine counting, you know, a hand selected, you know, series of ballots. And again, none of that gets down to the nitty gritty. And then, you know, and none of it addresses the security issues. So here's how this works, and we made it very clear in court. There is no chain of custody in the state of Oregon that allows a voter to know that their vote, once it left their envelope, was ever counted.
Right.
It's all behind closed doors. You don't know, Mark. I'm assuming you voted. You don't know that your vote was ever counted. Now, that's insane. Many other states, in Florida that use an absentee kind of mail-in ballot system, partly because that obviously in Florida you can still vote in person. But there's a chain of custody. You know at every stage of the counting process and the handling process where your ballot is if you sent it in absentee in Florida. And they can verify that it was counted, literally. It was in this batch, and of 100 ballots, your ballot was counted. They don't tell you the order it was counted in, obviously. But I'm sure somebody might even know that. And without short of walking in and voting in person and putting your own ballot in the ballot box, it's very difficult for people to have confidence that their ballots were counted. And that's what the whole premise of this lawsuit has been about. It's not about fraud. It's not about mail-in balloting versus some other system. It basically says that the current system in Oregon is creating a widespread crisis of confidence in a huge percentage of the electorate, and it's divisive and it's unhealthy for a Republican election like we have, or a Democratic election. If you're on the left, they like to say that.
Yeah.
and that's the piece of it is because it's a constitutional question, a 14th Amendment question, votes should count in this standard. Ready? Both the winner and the loser candidate, they both should agree that the system was secure and transparent and accurate and fair. And if they can't do that, we have a problem.
Yeah.
And obviously in Oregon, we haven't met that standard for a very long time.
No, we're not even close to it for sure. Okay, let's go and take a break there. Come back, we'll continue our discussions about election integrity, and we'll get into that lawsuit they filed. Stay with us. We're talking today to Mark Thielman. He's an advocate and an activist for education, real school choice, and he's the chief petitioner for that and also for election integrity. And so, Mark, during the break there, my producer was wondering, haven't there been court cases that ruled a state or county has to have chain of custody on these ballots?
That is correct, yeah. There's even an Oregon law that basically asserts that. The thing is, none of it's enforced, and there's no accountability. That would involve the governor or the courts engaging to make sure that the Secretary of State's office is following through with those standards, and same with the election, county election clerks, et cetera. None of those rules or laws are enforced.
So let's say a hypothetical. So let's say somebody puts their ballot in the mail or drops it off the ballot box, either way. Once that ballot is open and it's separated from that envelope, is there anything to stop some nefarious actor of taking hundreds of those ballots, throwing the legitimate ones out, and substituting them with another ballot that votes the way that they want them?
No, there's nothing that stops that. And, that was asserted in the lawsuit. That we have a whistleblower and very good evidence. I mean, specifics, very, very specific information where ballots are recycled at the University of Oregon. They are collected, they are dropped off to the SEIU, and at the time in the Olano Credit Union basement bank, or bank basement of the bank, where the SEIU rented the space. And then we have evidence of emails from the SEIU out to its members asking for help filling out ballots.
Wow.
I mean, don't know what more you can have. Now, what are those ballots good for, right? Well, they're only good if you take them in outside of an envelope, and you take votes you don't like and you swap them for the ones that you do like, the ones that you filled out.
Exactly.
And since county election workers, a lot of them are unionized, and a lot of them are very sympathetic to their political positions on the left. And it is absolutely egregious what's going on. I have, after getting involved in this, remember I started this process trying to show that we have integrity in elections. And I have been since made aware that we do not have integrity in our current mail-in balloting system.
No.
It's corrupt, just like Shamia Fagan is corrupt.
Yeah. So as far as the election integrity lawsuit is concerned, you filed this along with Chuck Wise, Ben Edel, Don Powers, Senator Linthicum, all of whom have been guests here on iSpy. Also Janice Dysinger, who's a friend of ours, and about half dozen others. Oregon is the Wuhan lab of leftist ideology and policy because they test it here before they unleash it elsewhere. But an election integrity win here would also be a win for other states if we can fix our election system then it could then lead to improvements in other states. And I'd like to summarize your lawsuit. This is from the Northwest Observer. The lawsuit, quote, asks for a declaration that Oregon's mail-in voting and computer tabulation of votes are unconstitutional and asks for an injunction against use of those systems in election. The lawsuit seeks relief from laws and policies that inflate voter rolls, use hackable tabulators, and which mandate mail-in ballots. The lawsuit also seeks to untangle the web of the state's efforts to block citizens' efforts to discover the many nefarious ways an election can be compromised. So did that summary miss anything about what the lawsuit is trying to accomplish?
No, it's fairly accurate. The whole premise of all of that, and it came out in the hearing because the judge asked a clarifying question was, you know, if this system is broken, what do we replace it with? And of course, everybody's thinking, well, we want to get rid of mail-in balloting. That's not the context of all those comments. The issue was that it's based on the premise that elections are supposed to be of the people and for the people and by the people, and that they are accountable to the people. And if you're using tabulation machines with supposed proprietary data that you can't go in and unlock because of, you know, copyright and all the other things and, you know, proprietary law, then you can't go out and say verifiably that somebody hasn't hacked that. Nobody's right. Saying that it has been hacked. We never asserted any of that in the lawsuit. We had to keep clarifying that to the defense, that what we're saying is it goes back to confidence. You can't have confidence in something proprietary that's a for-profit corporation, you know, whether it's Dominion or some other system, that's going to cause a lot of people concern. Now, you know, the system that people had confidence in for hundreds of years, it was much harder to cheat on a widespread scale, and that is very small precincts manned by people from the local community, mm-hmm. in which people came in and voted in person, in private, in a booth, and then they put their ballot in the box, and they had a high degree that it was counted because those ballots put in the box were counted there at that precinct.
That's right. That's right.
And they stay at that precinct. So that means that the system is you can audit the system much more easily.
Sure.
Because the paper stays in the geographic area from which you collected.
Well, it's definitely a lot easier to trust somebody that you know because you see them on the street there within your own community. So it's a lot easier to trust your neighbors than it is to try to trust some corporation based in allegedly in Mississippi or some such place. So I want to go back a little bit to what that summary says. I want to deal with that last point first about untangling the web of the state's efforts to block efforts by citizens to discover the many nefarious ways an election can be compromised. I really like how your lawsuit puts it, that the state claims they want free and fair elections and claim that elections are free and fair, but then block every effort to people to scrutinize the elections as to whether or not they really are, in fact, free and fair. So what are some examples of how they've blocked efforts to uncover what the state is up to?
Well, when they found out that counties were giving out cast vote records, which was kind of a new thing, for the Shamia Fagan at the time, she hit the panic button, and she sent an email, this is all about free and fair, right, to county clerks saying, well, there's a chance that somebody could have written their name on a ballot, and therefore you have to charge huge amounts to redact and for attorneys to look at every ballot before they're turned over or scanned. And I mean, even the city of San Francisco releases their cast vote record, but not in Oregon. And the reason is that they knew that certain people were onto them because contained within that cast vote record is an opportunity to uncover fraud. Let me give you an example. We were in court, and the defense came back at us and said, you know, well, they said that there's more registered voters than there are people in Oregon. Well, there's 4.2 million registered voters, and there's 4.356 million people in Oregon, which was bizarre because I wrote on my notes, did he just listen to what he just said? We don't have 4 million living voters in Oregon.
Mm.
Okay. I mean, we've got a huge portion of the population that's under the age of 18. And we responded with the truth. Okay, we looked up all 36 counties who all posted their final vote tallies, and we added them together, and it didn't come up with the number that you're purporting. The guy had no response. The judge looked mortified. She was wide-eyed.
Wow,
like, what?
Wow.
Is this true? This is the kind of sham that our government is trying to sell. And then they say, when you challenge them, well, you can't challenge us because we're the experts. Yeah. Well, you don't have to be an expert to add up 36 counties.
Right. Yeah. It's that lack of ballot. It's that lack of challenge that I find really disturbing. And in fact, your lawsuit cites Joe Biden himself, who said any citizen who, quote, questions the integrity of our free and fair elections is a threat to democracy. You know, if the mere act of questioning elections is a threat to democracy, you don't have a democracy, you've got a dictatorship. And I know Joe Biden says a lot of nonsense, but if stupid was a sport, that was a hole-in-one. Okay, let's go ahead and take a break right there. We'll have more with Mark Thielman talking about election integrity after this. Welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. Talk today to Mark Thielman to talk about election integrity, among some other issues we hope to get to. Mark, in that lawsuit there, one of the things that I found to be really interesting, and we'll put the lawsuit up online so people can read it themselves, but you said this, in Lane County, citizens assembled to investigate the voter rolls in the county. They found that there were an unusually high number of registrations at numerous single addresses. There were 171 locations in Lane County with eight or more voters registered to vote at that address. They also found registrations tied to locations that do not exist, such as vacant lots, vacant buildings, and street corners. They found 105 registrations with no address on file. So here's the thing. Someone had to do that. Those don't just magically appear into voter rolls unless somebody committed that fraud. So what's the state's response to that?
Well, the issue is they're trying to make it easy to get a ballot. Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, it's all emotional for them, not thinking for one minute that it actually undermines the validity of the election. There should be zero people registered to a Walmart parking lot.
Right.
But there were 12 people registered to that. I mean, it goes on and on out in the Amazon Parkway in Eugene at the park. That's a park. There's no houses there. There's no mailing address there. But yet, you know, there was, you know, 36 people registered there. And homelessness is part of the issue because, you know, a lot of nonprofits will go register homeless and assign them to some address. And then then those homeless are relocated and then they go register them again. But the ballots keep coming, you know, especially if they move out of county in particular. So, you know, St. Vinny's DePaul is another one. That's something we're holding for trial. You know, they receive ballots and then no one knows where they go. But we know that St. Vinny's DePaul profits from their government grants for some of the work that they do for apartments and for stores. It's just bizarre to me that no one's asking common sense questions.
Yeah. Well, these are common sense questions. And, you know, just to put on conspiracy hat, I had seen this not too long ago that actually having invalid addresses is part of that plan for election fraud because when they bounce back, the post office hangs on to those, allegedly. And so you've got a stack of invalid ballots that are just waiting to be opened and filled out. So
absolutely.
Yeah. But
so just so everyone knows, I mean, we have some video of a person in a backpack in Eugene in Lane County walking in and then walking back out and then people coming out with stacks of stuff that look like ballots.
Mm.
What we were alleging to the judge is, you know, because the defense is like, well, you don't know if those were ballots. Well, we don't have to. Just the very behavior of that very behavior that there would be no check on anybody walking in to the tabulation room with a backpack. It shouldn't be allowed.
No.
But it is.
Yep.
You know, see how it harms confidence?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, just to as far as harming confidence, you know, as evidence of how fair and free our overlords, I mean our elected officials, want free and fair elections, let's remember that when the Oregon's election director detailed problems in the 2020 election, he was immediately fired.
Yes.
nothing says trust the elections like firing someone who raises concerns. I mean, do you remember that? I mean, with all the insanity of the 2020 election, with just enough votes appearing out of thin air to swing to Biden, the firing of Oregon's election director kind of got lost and overlooked in all of that.
Well, again, you know, he broke ranks with the narrative, and you can't do that. You know, we have a toxic, corrupt government culture, and, you know, I can't express that enough. And you're not allowed to ask these questions. Mm. I mean, what other explanation is there for why aren't people asking the obvious?
Exactly. Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
And because you're snuffed out, you lose your job, you're fired. That's why.
Well, his name was Stephen Trout, and I'm curious whatever happened to him. Last I heard, he was kind of in hiding somewhere in California. Has your legal team reached out to him at all?
You know, we haven't yet, but that's a very good suggestion. And we have some inside information surrounding that, you know, we have to pick through in terms of what might be useful. You know, that would be an excellent subject for discovery. He is on our discovery list so that when we go to trial, he will be interviewed. So if that comforts people.
Well, so getting back to your lawsuit, it was dismissed for lack of standing. And I think prior to the 2020 election, when President Trump himself, the guy who had the election stolen out from him, somehow did not have standing. I really can't remember hearing that lack of standing. And now it seems to be the go-to legal answer for practically everything, especially election lawsuits. So how did the judge define Oregon citizens don't have standing to question Oregon's elections?
Well, her premise is based on a whole bunch of precedents, court precedents. So go back to separate but equal in the South, segregation. Okay, in the 30s and 40s, there were many people who attempted to sue because there were practices and institutional practices, business practices that were discriminatory towards people of color. And the courts had a whole mountain of precedents that supported separate but equal, saying, well, but that's Macy's store, and they serve hundreds of thousands of people, so you're not hurt any more than any other person of color. And that was the reasoning. Well, the judge, who's a magistrate judge, she just got her contract renewed. That very morning, by the way, she has a career interest in not rocking the boat. So she took the safe route, which is to say, I'm not going to consider the constitutional question, the federal constitutional question regarding confidence, because I can just say that you don't have standing because your argument is generalized. You're not directly hurt any more than anyone else. Well, again, Brown versus Board of Education, which was the court case in 1954, versus the Topeka, Kansas, that was a landmark legislation just recently quoted, by the way, by the Biden administration, of all things. That case, that was thrown out on standing too when they were in the lower courts, just like we are. And they ended up going all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, and they won the case. And we have every expectation that our case will be the solution for the U.S. Supreme Court, because we're not alleging fraud. We're talking about psychological impact, confidence. Yeah. And you know, we hear it all the time. We have to save the banking industry because we can't have people losing confidence in banks.
Yeah.
So I do believe this has legs. We just have to get out of Oregon and into the appellate court.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, we'll talk about that appeal in a little bit here. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Mark Thielman. Welcome back. We're talking to Mark Thielman. He is an activist here in Oregon working on such issues as election integrity, which we've been talking about, and also on things like school choice, trying to get that on the ballot in 2024. He's the chief petitioner for that. So, Mark, as far as your lawsuit is concerned, it's been appealed now. The judge has dismissed it for lack of standing, which I just find appalling. But what now that it's been appealed?
Well, what we do is we're hoping to get into the appeals court. We've asked for an expedited schedule, so hopefully as early as August is where we can get a chance to have review and have the process. And our argument is very simple, is that the judge did not consider the obvious constitutional question, which is a legitimate exception to otherwise kind of generalized court precedent. And so the goal is that we get a panel of appellate judges that sit down and look at that and grant us standing. And of course, they have a couple of options. They can say, no, you do have standing, which kicks it back for trial, which means the state can appeal that. So you can appeal the appeal, as you know. Mm-hmm. And so we're fully expecting to march this thing straight to the U.S. Supreme Court. That is our hope. We're hoping to do it in 18 months.
So let's say that Mark Thielman gets elected Secretary of State. What would you do to overhaul the system to restore faith in our elections?
Well, I'd start by telling people the truth. and then educating the public, you know, with in terms of what third party audits are and what standards for election integrity ought to be. And it would be information that very few people, adult people, couldn't understand and get behind. Everyone wants their vote to count. Everyone wants access to voting for all people. And I would argue that everyone wants a system that's not easy to cheat, you know, or have cheating occur or fraud occur. So you start with that premise, and then Secretary of State has tremendous authority, as you know, to set rules for election, county election clerks, et cetera. So it would be a big game changer for election integrity if I was fortunate enough to have that position.
So I'm at about a 40% trust level when it comes to our elections and election laws here in Oregon. That falls to about 10% or even less when it's a close election, which is when the incentives for cheating really kick in. Mm-hmm. I just think that they've built in too many potential openings for potential fraud, like mail-in ballots, like not having one day of voting, like allowing county clerks the discretion of whether or not they're going to count ballots that arrive in the 10 days after an election, like not being able or like not being required to show ID at the ballot box, like automatic voter registration when you get your driver's license. And oh, by the way, the Oregon DMV database just got hacked. What could possibly go wrong?
Well, I mean, that was a very inclusive list. And you know, there's obviously more things. But again, you can't have integrity because we say so. That's the government we have now. We need to have integrity because people truly believe based on evidence from what they can experience, what they can see, and what they can understand. And that's the real key. And we'll know we have that when both the winner and loser in campaigns and those who supported them and voted for them, everybody will agree that the system is integrous. And that's, we have to get back to that standard or we don't have a democracy.
Mm-hmm.
We're no longer a republic. We're Venezuela.
That's right. Yeah. Well, you know, it seems to me, even if we didn't change any of the other existing laws, a simple fix would be to add a law that makes it absolutely punitive for anyone caught cheating, especially so for government officials caught cheating. For example, if the state truly wants to demonstrate it takes election integrity seriously, show it. Pass a law that levies a $2 million fine per instance for anyone who is caught cheating, and also offer a $1 million reward for anyone who turns in someone who is cheating. I mean, this would be a simple fix, and that's laws. That's what laws should do in a civil society, punish wrongdoers and reward good behaviors. So what do you think?
Well, again, you're making way too much sense, so you'll probably never get elected in the current system here. But no, I mean, everything you're saying makes perfect sense. Isn't that the kind of relationship we want?
Yeah, you would think.
And if that's the relationship we want, we ought to use our vote to hire people that believe in that relationship.
Yeah, yeah. Well, as you said, America is not a democracy. A democracy is five people voting to take your wallet. America is a republic, but we're in danger of becoming a banana republic because, believe it or not, right now the Biden administration is actually suing to be able to continue to censor free speech and interfere with elections. That next with Mark Thielman. And welcome back. We're in our final segment now here with Mark Thielman. We've been having a wide-ranging interview with him, talking mainly about election integrity. And one part of that is the ability of American citizens to discuss issues openly and freely. The First Amendment is intricately tied to open elections. But during the 2020 elections, we had members of Biden's secret supporters in the deep state and especially in the intelligence community sabotage free speech, going so far as to knowingly lie about the details of the crimes exposed on Hunter's laptop and conspiring with big tech, including not just social media like Facebook and Twitter, but Google and other search engines to actively hide information about the crimes and corruptions of the Biden family. And this mattered because 16% of Democrat voters said after the election, had they known about the crimes detailed on that laptop, they would not have voted for Biden. 16% of 81 million voters is that's just under 13 million people who would not have voted for Biden, and then Trump wins easily. And that government censorship continued after the election to downplay and even ban anyone who questioned the election. I was personally banned on Twitter for questioning it.
But that censorship continued in the era of COVID. If you dared question the government's COVID mandates and things on things like masks or closures or the vaccines, something you personally experienced, the government was demanding big tech censor such people who came to their attention. But in a huge win for free speech and the First Amendment, a federal judge in the Missouri versus Biden case ended the government censorship program, granting an injunction that blocks various Biden administration officials and agencies like the DOJ or FBI from working with or even contacting them to censor posts on social media. And this is huge. What are your thoughts on all this?
Well, it's another landmark case. It's an example of how things work in a functioning republic. You know, we always know that the Democrats are short-termed, that they would lie about Hunter's laptop for the short-term gain of getting that extra 13 million votes.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth continues on. It's like the tortoise and the hare, and the tortoise has now won the race. And the evidence is overwhelming, and therefore the judge, you know, ruled on that sweeping ruling. I mean, it's a big deal. Basically, the federal government has to honor its own Bill of Rights.
Mm-hmm.
It does not get to engage in these kinds of behaviors. And to me, it's a huge condemnation of the Biden administration and the culture that they've tried to foist on all of us in America. So I would say it's as big as Brown versus Board of Education was in the 20th century.
Well, specifically, the agencies and their staff members are prohibited from meeting or contacting by phone, email, text, message, or engaging in any communication of any kind with social media companies, urging, encouraging, pressuring, or inducing in any manner for removal, deletion, suppression, or reduction of content containing protected free speech. I guess the question that jumps immediately to my mind is, do you think they will actually comply with this ruling, or are they so corrupt they'll do it anyway?
Well, they won't do it anyway. What they'll do is they'll redefine what national security, which is one of the exceptions
yes.
the judge
yep.
allowed.
That's
and
what jumped to my mind, too. Yeah.
They'll say anyone who questions the integrity of elections is a threat to our national security. So they'll just change the narrative. And again, that won't hold a lot of water in the court of public opinion. But in the short run, it may allow them to bifurcate the law, if you will.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, and you certainly dealt with this personally at LC School District, what the government was fighting to censor turned out to be the truth.
True.
The Wuhan lab leak was real. Masks didn't work and caused more harm than good. The vaccines didn't work. They are certainly not safe nor effective. Everything the government pushing was a lie, and they were censoring the truth. I mean, George Orwell, eat your heart out.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing is, they still try to sow doubt about that, because
mm-hmm.
what does the CDC say on this new round of fifth generation COVID vaccine? That it's safe and effective. There is zero evidence for
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
But the morbidity data shows that, you know, for every person that may not have been died in the hospital because they had a shot, there were three heart attacks. That's what it showed.
Yeah.
And so there was no net saving of life. It's an absolute disaster. It's one of the biggest government disasters in U.S. history.
Yeah. Well, and perhaps the oddest twist of all, the government is now going to fight in court for the right to censor people on the internet that disagrees with their policies, because the Biden administration decided to appeal the ruling on the very next day, July 5th. So they are actually wanting the courts to allow them to censor American citizens, you know, the people supposedly protected by the First Amendment. But I wonder if the Biden administration realizes that by challenging the ruling, they're effectively admitting that they had been censoring. But I guess they really don't care because they want the ability to censor. I mean, this is just bizarre that our own government is admitting for all to see that they want the ability to defy the First Amendment and to gag its own citizens.
Well, I think, you know, we all have to, at first they weren't going to challenge it, and then they decided to challenge it, like all within one news cycle of the day, you know. And, but just remember that this court ruling is from a federal judge. It's not from the U.S. Supreme Court. So go for it, Biden, and let's see what the U.S. Supreme Court has to say about it.
Yeah.
I have a feeling the verdict's going to be the same, except then it'll be the law of the land.
Yeah.
It'll be a Supreme Court precedence, which is more protection for free speech.
Yes. Well, I don't know how any sane judge doesn't uphold this ruling. I mean, if the Biden administration is doing this, do they really want the next Republican president to have this ability to censor speech that they don't like? I just don't see this getting past the Supreme Court, like you said. Just real quick, we've only got a minute here with you. We now have a situation where someone is bringing drugs into the White House
At this point, they definitely don't know who did it, and we definitely don't know how Hunter managed to get the drugs past security. But it just seems this administration is determined to break any laws they don't like because they don't fear any recrimination. I mean, have we reached a point like any other banana republic where the rulers are exempt from laws?
Yes, we have. And that's the situation we're in. Fortunately, though, we have an opportunity. We have enough free electing states that still have some level of election integrity. Oregon is exempted, of course. That we really have a shot of turning this around. And in the same way you're seeing a shift in the courts, even the liberal courts, in support of like in North Carolina or South Carolina, excuse me, ruling in support of election integrity. The pendulum is swinging, and the future is very bright for conservatives.
Yes.
I want to leave people with that hope.
Yes, I absolutely agree with that. Mark Thielman, we're up against the clock. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
That really is a great note to end on. The future is very bright for conservatives, but only if we don't sit back or wait for someone else to make it happen. Instead, we need to do what we can to make that bright future a reality. Like signing the petition to stop Oregon's Habitat Conservation Plan to abandon our forests for 70 years. Do that at OregonStrongerTogether.com, OregonStrongerTogether.com. Like signing both petitions to get school choice on the ballot to give parents the means to choose the best school for their children. Imagine a generation of kids, the majority of whom are not pre-programmed Marxists when they graduate from high school, but instead learn about history and freedom and liberty and how precious it is by going to the right school for them. Sign those petitions and volunteer at educationfreedomfororegon.com, educationfreedomfororegon.com. And here's something. Did you know you can weigh in on bills the governor ought to veto? Like the horrid HB 2002 that takes away parents' rights, which gives underage children the ability to go behind parents' backs with the enablement of school officials and the ability to undergo permanent life-altering surgeries or puberty blockers, but that bill holds no adults in their lives accountable for encouraging this. That's just one bill. The governor has about 300 bills on her desk right now that she could veto. She's asking the public to weigh in. You can weigh in. Go to iSpyRadio.com, that's the letter I, iSpyRadio.com, and look for today's show page, which is 13-27. Scroll down that page and look for the links and information section near the bottom. There, we'll have a link to a contact form that you can use to let her know what bills you think she needs to veto. Not sure about bill numbers or which ones to weigh in on? Thanks to the Oregon Citizens Lobby War Room, we'll have a list of bills on which you might want to share your opinion. Again, iSpyRadio.com, show 13-27, or you can find that information by using the Take Action tab at any of the top of the pages on iSpyRadio.com. If you want that brighter future, don't stay silent when you have an easy chance to speak up. Because as we say every week, the best information is no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.